This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
So you saw those turtles twice already.
I saw them two times. I saw two of them things. I saw it twice.
I haven't. I've been so damn busy. I haven't gotten to go see it yet, but I'm really excited. Obviously, you saw it twice. It was good enough to see twice.
Yeah, man. That shit is dope. The first time I saw it with Man in Hats. They came down here for Man's birthday.
Nice.
And then we saw it. But my roommate, both my roommates didn't come with us. One of them was like out of state, and the other one I think like had work. So after they left, I went with both of them, because a lot of the stuff that happens is like there's a lot of East Coast rap, like needle drops and shit like that in the movie. So like I was like just off that alone, y'all are gonna think this is ridiculous. And we went and they thought it was dope. One of my roommates, he like, I loved it. Like I really did. Like I really, really loved it. But like, I think he loved it more than I do, because like, yeah, he texted me this morning. We live in the same house. He texted me this morning, like, man, I'm still thinking about that shit. Like, I don't think it's a better movie, but I think I like that shit more than Spider-Verse. Like he was giving me all that. And I think the shit, I feel him. Cause I think that shit is dope. Ice Cube's greatest performance as an actor, as Superfly. Anybody that's seen that movie, I think, will agree with me. He has way more charisma as a Ninja Turtles villain than he does as a cop in Ride Along.
We might have some Ride Along stands listening, dude. You better be careful.
Yeah, it's two of them shits. You know, Ride Along like broke like January records, I think, when it came out.
Crazy.
Like, because, you know, because January is just kind of like the, let's dump this out.
Yep.
Yeah. But like but also right along,
some things can come out of January looking really good because it's such a generally barren time for movies to come out. Sometimes right. If like something like last year, Avatar was just tearing it up. But also Megan came out this year.
Was that January when Megan came
out? Yeah, it was in January.
Jeez.
And Megan did pretty good. So yeah, Ride Along, that's a huge January hit.
Yeah, I guess so. I think it did like over 100, which was like
crazy.
And then for that kind of like stupid here you go movie, like I don't think they expected it to do as good as it did.
For sure. That's why they made a second one.
Yeah, and without Ride Along or Ride Along 2, we do not get those brilliant sketches of Conan with Kevin Hart, Ice Cube.
Those are so funny. God.
Those are the best, and we owe it to those Conan ride-alongs.
I was just listening to Conan put out a like Remembering Paul Rubens episode, and it's mostly just him talking about Paul and then replaying the episode where he had Paul Rubens on. And man, it's a good episode. Good episode. Highly recommend if you're a big Pee-wee or Paul Rubens fan. Rest in peace. Go check out that Conan pod episode. Were you a Pee-wee fan?
No, I wasn't, but my roommate is. So like he it affected him the most.
Have you seen much Pee-wee? Have you seen anything?
Not like brief glimpses on Adult Swim kind of thing. Like Word. That's probably as much as I got.
You got to at least watch Pee-wee's Big Adventure. Okay. Yeah, the first one in particular. That's Tim Burton's first movie, which is weird.
Mm-hmm. But I heard that.
It's so damn good. He's such a funny character. Can't recommend it enough. I mean, it's like he's like a human cartoon character. You got to check it out. And that first movie, Pee-wee's Big Adventure, truly is so, so good.
Like, I heard that second one ain't have bad either, though.
The Pee-wee's Big Top. A lot of people don't like Pee-wee's Big Top. I haven't seen it since I was a kid, and I liked it as a kid. I haven't seen it since.
Wait,
and
then no,
I
never not watched that one. What's the
Netflix one? Pee-wee's Holiday.
Right.
I've heard that was good too. I haven't seen that yet either, but I think I'm going to do a little Pee-wee-thon in his honor.
Ooh.
actually, those would be kind of fun for us to maybe cover on the Patreon. That's actually kind of a great fit for us to cover on the Patreon.
That would be pretty cool.
Really funny stuff. There's like a whole bit in Pee-wee's Big Adventure where the whole premise is Pee-wee's prized bike gets stolen. He's like goes across the country trying to find it. And he gets told at some point, like someone says that it's in the basement of the Alamo. And so like he's trying to get to the Alamo to get to the basement to find it. And like then finds out that there is no basement in the Alamo. But like to this day, the Alamo says, like the representatives at the Alamo say that we get people here asking about our basement every day. And then we don't have a basement. We never have. Pretty crazy. All right.
You know,
go ahead.
We probably should, but real quick, just speaking of Patreon, I was just thinking about, I saw a week ago, me and my roommate watched two Ralph Bakshi movies in a row, and one of them, my roommate really latched onto, and one of them, I feel like I'm latching onto now, and it's crazy, because like, I think I thought it was pretty good when I watched it, but I haven't been able to stop thinking about it. So he latched onto American Pop, which we watched second.
Okay. Right.
But I latched on to Heavy Traffic, which we watched first. And nice. That movie is weird, dude. But
I would hope it's got to be weird.
Yeah. And then two, that's the kind of, I guess that shows you the kind of director he is, because they're both like two completely different kinds of movies.
Right.
Saying that to say, both would be cool. For Patreon, especially
we should. I mean, we've got one Bakshi and we got one Bakshi under our belt. So,
right,
it's, yeah, seems like.
Oh, and we watched Crumb. You know what Crumb is?
No,
Crumb is the doc on the cartoonist that invented Fritz the Cat.
Oh, interesting.
It is bizarre, The first section of the movie, practically, he talks about the movie and he's like, fam, I tried to get them to take my name off that bullshit. Like, I didn't have anything to do with that. And I thought it was because, you know, inherently you see a movie like that and you think like, oh, does he think the filmmakers went too hard? Like, you think they... Nah, I think he just thinks it's pussy. Like, I think he thinks they didn't go hard enough, which if you've seen Fritz the Cat, it's like, what more could they do?
That's so funny. Damn.
But yeah.
Well, I got to check that one out. Cool, man. Cool. All right. Let's cue the theme song and get talking about Futurama.
Watching them for years, it's always been something that fit with all the animated characters that's doing their own bits. With a fry who's in the future and a family guy that sucks. With a father from a Hilleberger family that is about to show and spies is the same guy, except he totally same. End of verse.
Let's watch cartoons that burn.
Yeah, that's bananas.
As rough.
What the f*** is up, everybody? Welcome to Cartoons That Curse After Dark. No, not After Dark. God.
You want to do it again?
Damn it. No. No.
All right.
Keep it in. Keep it in. All double right. No. I fucked up. Welcome to Cartoons That Curse. I did After Dark so many times for so many months, and I've only done this again like 4 or 5 times. Cartoons That Curse. Welcome to Cartoons That Curse. This is the podcast about cartoons that swear, adult animation, your favorite stuff that you might see on Fox, Animation Domination, or Adult Swim, etc. You know the vibes. My name is Johnny. I'm a co-host here. I'm here with my friend Toonrific Tariq. How you doing, Tariq?
I'm doing good for a co-host. How are you doing?
I am also doing good for a co-host. Oh man. Maybe I wonder if we can talk to Mikey and we can both get bumped up to host.
Ooh. The dream.
Man. We are here once again to continue talking about the current season of Futurama, season 8, if you're counting production seasons, season 11, if you're counting broadcast seasons, which most people probably are because it's the only thing it's listed as on Hulu. So much for us doing everything in production order.
Yeah.
So, this is our third week in. Last week, we covered Children of a Lesser Bog. The previous week, The Impossible Stream. This week is How the West Was 1010001.
Great title.
This episode was, it was kind of slightly dreaded by the fans because of the clips were all crypto related. Mm. It's a crypto episode. They're like, that's too topical. And I still see people saying this episode's too topical, which I don't understand.
Yeah. After watching, because at first, like, even the concerns about the crypto thing, right? I never cared about that. Like, I don't know why, but it never seemed like too topical to me. And that's, I don't know. And even when you see what's going on in the trailer, it's like they're obviously not doing one-to-one.
Right.
And then, like, yeah, you see the episode, and that, it is laughable how little that stuff comes into play in this episode.
They basically just use crypto as like the plot device in that it's basically like gold. So they're doing the gold rush story like they did in the 1800s. Everyone rushed west to try and mine for gold to make a fortune. And that's basically the idea they went with for crypto. It's like, oh, everyone's crypto mining. So let's do an old gold rush story where we do the old west. And I think that's exactly how Futurama should like write their stories around topical ideas. It makes way more sense to me to like build out a themed or sci-fi storyline that at the heart of it is this topical thing, but like the story, like it doesn't feel like the jokes or the storyline itself is topical. You know, and so I like that that's the direction they went here. And I don't know, when I see people be like, this was way too topical, I'm like, how? Like, I don't think, I just can't even, like when I think about things that are too topical, I think about like fucking Susan Boyle in the Attack of the Killer App. I think about like the Yo Gabba Gabba parody in Yo Leela Leela, you know, like stuff that's just like, okay, are we really need to like on the nose parody this thing? But this is just like, what if Futurama did the old West? And that's pretty much it. It feels akin, at least structurally and conceptually, to episodes like Roswell That Ends Well, where they're like going into a different space they're not familiar with and adapting to it. It feels kind of like 300 Big Boys, where you've got all these different storylines that are happening separate of each other and then intersect at the end, you know? This is my least favorite of the season so far. But I didn't hate it. I just like, I liked it fine. I think it's even my least favorite of the six I've seen, but I think it's fine. Like, I don't know. There's nothing about this episode that made me upset about it being an episode. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't like Attack of the Killer App. It wasn't like parts of Inagata Delilah or Proposition Infinity from early Comedy Central era, like where I'm just like, oh, why did they do this? It's more of a just like, this is an okay Futurama. You know,
I get you. Yeah. I think I like it less than you, but I still kind of feel that way about it. Like, I don't think, like, I'm not like, oh, this is like a bad episode. I'm just like, I just thought it was like really boring. And the first time I watched it the night after, the day after it came out, like, it was really like hard for me to focus on it. Yeah. And I was like, maybe it's just cause I'm like watching this in the morning or something like that. I'm like, all right, we got to do the episode in like 2 days. I'm just watch it again. And I watched it again a couple hours ago. And yeah, I was definitely able to pay more attention to it, but I still was like disinterested. I think the difference between like this one and something like the ones you named, like Big Boys or Roswell, is that like all of those, because they do that thing where they all like okay, we'll follow this character and this character, like all that, like the entire time or whatever. And the difference is that I like all of the stories that all of those characters go through in that.
Yeah,
one, those
I only like, I only really liked about half of them in this episode. Like there's some that I just did not care much about.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know. There's things about most of them I like, but they didn't keep my attention fully.
That's my thing, is that there's like a lot of, there's like, I feel like I should have fucking loved the Hermes and Dwight shit.
Yeah,
and
I just kind of thought it was all right. I actually thought you would, yeah. I do like the Hermes and Dwight stuff, because there's some like really good attention to detail that I thought they had in there.
There absolutely is.
Like I love like Hermes like trying to protect Dwight from Roberto is, after having just watched $6 Million Man, is like perfect. I'm like, oh yeah, this is exactly what spurred on that whole episode.
Mm-hmm.
And that was when he came in and tried to mug him and LaBarbara. So it's nice to see him just immediately try to protect Dwight and call him a psychotic killer, you know?
He's got firsthand experience there.
And I don't dislike the idea of Dwight. We've got nothing from Dwight in so long. You know what I mean? Like, even just in the back, like, he's barely in $6 Million Man even, right?
Right. And
he's there, but...
I knew that Dwight was not played by Phil LaMarr, but then I kept hearing Phil LaMarr and I was like, is he played by him later? And I looked it up. Dwight is played by a different man in the Fox run, and then it's Phil LaMarr for the rest.
Yes, that's why I looked that up too.
He sounds like Static Shock here.
Right. Well, that's funny. I guess they just maybe didn't use him. They didn't use him that much after the original run, but
he's only in two in the original run. It always feels like more than that. But when I clicked on the guys,
so he's probably only in like five or six episodes total. I mean, like, he's
wild.
In them, but he doesn't talk much.
His
big ones in the original. No, he's in three at least. He's got a big role in Route of All Evil. That's the one he's introduced in. He's got a big role in 300 Big Boys, because it's him and Hermes with the like limbo, the giant,
the legs.
Yeah, the legs.
Yeah,
and
the
then,
legs.
And then Bender Should Not Be Allowed on Television. He's got a big role in.
Yeah. So maybe so
there's at
I don't
least
know.
Three. Maybe they had already swapped it. Maybe they had already swapped out the voice actor for one of them.
Probably. Yeah, because that's because I was when I was looking at the IMDb, the guy only had two listed.
Yes.
So maybe
I saw
like
that
Phil
too.
Phil is one of them.
Phil maybe jumped in later. And then like he's got a pretty not super substantial, but he's got a lot of talk. He's got a lot of speaking lines in Bender's Game in the first half of that. Where they're all playing D&D.
He's in Big Score, right? Because
because of Hermes. Right. He's in it. I don't know how much he
speaks, right?
Speaks, yeah. Oh, and he's like, he maybe doesn't talk much, but there's, remember that shot in Leela's Hurdles where little Hermes and Dwight are like laughing at the same thing. So there's at least that. Like they have him in places. And then he's like, okay, so thinking back to the Comedy Central run, the only thing I can really think of is like, I think he's in $6 Million Man and the beginning of what's the it's the Near Death Wish, right? It's the one where with Farnsworth's parents, the beginning is Fry getting the delivery boy award and Dwight and his parents are there too because he's also getting an award.
Just
the opening of that episode. I can't remember. I think he maybe says something, but I can't remember.
I do remember him being there, though.
But he does, like, he did definitely sound different in this. Although, I felt like over the course of the episode, he kind of fell back into getting the voice right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like at first I was like, that sounds wrong. And then by the end, I was like, oh, it's getting better. It's, like, pretty close.
Right. Because, that, like, that's what made me, like, question it in general was, like, the first line he says is cool, and then the second line, it sounds like a different voice. And I was like, wait, what the fuck is going on? And then that's what made me, like, I was like, oh, wait, that is Phil. And then there's part of the episode where Dwight is putting on this, like, facade voice for Roberto. So you got Phil Lamar doing Dwight's voice, like,
yes, but as trying Dwight to sound deepening, gruff.
Yeah, like,
you yeah, know what I mean? Exactly. And that was like, I remember hearing that and being like, that sounds off, and then realizing why they were doing that.
Doing.
It's like, oh, yeah,
yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Yes, but that's actually, like this whole story didn't fully keep my attention, but like, mm-hmm. I like it on paper, especially. I like the idea of Dwight just being like, nah, screw you, Dad. I'm tired of this. I don't care about Limbo. I don't care about the old West. I just want to be like Roberto. He's cool. and that's got our sting for Hermes, who literally is like had this horrible experience with Roberto before. And then I like Roberto using Dwight. Like, I laugh really hard when Dwight just gets run over by the carriage.
Yeah. I like, what does he say? He says, that's like murder, right? Don't colleges check for shit like
yeah,
that? Like,
yes,
I like
that. That was funny. That was
I did like that.
And I also like when Dwight's like telling Hermes that he wants to be like Roberto, he does the ha-ha. And is Roberto also Phil Lamar?
Whoa, I have no idea. Who the fuck is Roberto?
It feels like it could be Roberto.
Whoa, I never
Futurama,
thought about it.
I'm going to look it up. I think, oh no, it's David Herman. David Herman is a great
actor. Dude, I typed in Robert on my phone cuz I was going to type out Roberto, and the suggestion is J. Robert Oppenheimer.
Here we are. He's back. Man. He's trending again. it's been so many years since Oppenheimer was in the news, and he's back. Oh man. But yeah, I do like.
What are
the other storylines?
Yeah. Like we got
There's the one that really felt like a dud to me was Bender and the donkey. Even though I like on paper love the idea of Bender hanging out with the donkey for an episode, I don't know. They just like I wish I had gotten more of a connection between them. Like,
I get that,
and I also just feel like I was talking to my friend about this the other day. It's I feel like when's the last time we had like a really good song in Futurama? Because it feels like we haven't since the Fox era, you know. I guess there's some. I don't mind a Bender's Big Score. I like some of the music in Bender's Big Score.
Yeah, of course. But that might.
But I don't know.
Mean, I think the last. Okay, all right. I'll go a little later. I think the Seth MacFarlane intro to Wild Green Yonder.
Totally. That might be great. That's
one.
True. That is great. That's true. Yeah. I love that's maybe one of my favorite ones.
Yeah.
But it's a little different. It's like the intro sequence song. Mm-hmm. They write this whole intro sequence. It's great.
But it might be the last one. I think that might be the last one.
Yeah. I don't remember liking any of the stuff they did in the Comedy Central era musically. And this one was another one where I was kind of like, whatever. Like, I like the detail that he still has that same guitar from the whole 40% Lead Belly episode we just watched. That's nice. And I do like the animation of like when the donkey starts kind of like singing along. Like, I like the donkey's face when he's singing. He's like got a good smile. But I don't know. It's just a weird storyline that didn't go particularly far. And then let's see. Amy didn't really have much. She was just panning for gold with Bender's ass the whole episode.
Right. Fry is reading.
Fry is reading, and Fry is trying to be the Borax kid's buddy.
Sidekick.
He's trying to be a sidekick. Yeah. Which I actually like. I think this is probably the most I've ever cared about the Borax kid in any of these. Granted, they've only shown him a few times, but like I was also noticing because I went back to watch all of his scenes in the Comedy Central era, which is where he's introduced. And the first one is that Newtopia episode, awful episode that I really hate a lot. He kind of just comes in at the end. There's a line in the middle where that rock monster who's turned them all genderless or swapped genders with he's just like, now you've made me lose my bet with the Borax kid. And that's, he just mentions the Borax kid there. And then at the end of the episode, the Borax kid comes down And he's like, oh, I better set things right. And he has like all these magic powers that he changes them all back. And he's also huge. He's way bigger than all of them in that. And then every time they bring him back, he's just been the normal size. He doesn't have any magic powers. He's just a grifting card player after this. And granted, in the first episode, they do like, he does like place a bet with this other monster. So gambling is part of his thing even to begin with. But it's funny how they swap that out. There's also something I noticed, and I think this might be like, well, I'm wondering what the intention was originally, because he says it sounds like the Feldspar Queen is taking off in his first appearance, and that's when he leaves. And in my head, when I heard that, I was like, is that a ship, or is it, because he's the Borax kid. Feldspar right. is another kind of mineral. Is the Feldspar Queen another character right. who he's going to hang out with? And then in Assy Come Home, we see him again, and he's on a riverboat casino in space called the Feldspar Queen. Gotcha. And so, but I feel like initially the intention was that's another Borax kid-like character. There's the Borax kid and the Feldspar Queen, and they made it a riverboat casino in the next one, which is fine. It's fun. It's at least a fun continuity thing. But yeah, what a weird little character. Who this is like the first time where he's done anything substantial in any way. And I don't know. I like the animation in the book that he's reading when they're showing like the cool little texture pictures.
Cool style change, yeah.
Yeah, and I like that they lean into him being a grifter, because like not only is he cheating at cards, not only is he lying about saving Leela to like keep up his like macho persona, he's also, we find out that he's completely plagiarized all of his books about it, has his own exploits. So like everything he does is bullshit. It's like his whole thing. So I don't know. I didn't mind that. Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. And then let's see, what else do we have? I like Zoidberg stealing the psychiatrist's office. I thought that was pretty funny. It didn't really go anywhere.
Right.
He helped the donkey, but I like that scene where he goes in and Roberto kills the doctor and Zoidberg just crosses out the doctor's name and writes his own name. I think that's pretty funny.
But that is, there's that part. And then there's the part where the Borax kid's sidekick dies, and then Zoidberg just kind of says that he's dead because he's
dead, and the mumbles talks, and he's like, "Don't argue with me, I'm the doctor."
right. Which there's a stop motion movie called Chuck Steele that it has the same kind of thing. Like, you know how like the Borax kid's sidekick keeps dying. That's Chuck Steele's thing. He's like a police officer in the 80s, and like every time he gets a new partner, he gives them a speech about how he doesn't like them and how he works alone, and then they just die. It happens classic. Like 4 to 5 times in the movie. That's
funny. I love that. Man, let's see. What else do we got here? I mean, I also like Roberto's knife gun. I love that fucking knife gun.
It's a funny looking design.
It's so funny. There's also some jokes I laughed at a lot here. Like, I like when Dwight calls Limbo stupid, and Hermes goes, "Limbo stupid? Where did I go wrong?" And the professor goes, "Probably when you took up Limbo. From what I'm hearing, it's stupid."
Just stupid. I like that.
It's pretty good.
The professor does a callback to the pilot.
The pilot, the pilot and the second episode. And it was set up in the first two episodes to feel like it was going to be a catchphrase runner. Only use it twice and never again until here. And it's like, and I am already in my pajamas, which I'm glad, because I always thought that joke was so funny.
It is funny.
I liked how shoehorned in it felt in the second episode. Like in the second one, he's looking through a telescope and he sees Leela and Fry like running away from something. And he's just like, I should do something about this, but I am already in my pajamas. I hope they keep it up. Which is actually interesting. We should talk about this real quick, because I didn't notice this until after I made my video. This episode is written by Ken Keeler, but he did not have the writing credit. He wrote under a, he wrote this episode
because I was looking. I'm like, who? I didn't know who that was. The name that you popped up,
dude. Dude, it's gonna blow your mind. First of all, Ken Keeler also wrote "The Series Has Landed," so that and on, in the commentary for that one, he talks about how he wants that he was like he wished he thought that was gonna be a runner of a joke. So I like that he wrote it in here.
Yeah, it's funny.
So he wrote his name Nona D. Spargmente or whatever. That is a that is literally just he wrote non disparagement. Like it's a non disparagement agreement. So I'm like, does Ken Keeler hate what he wrote on this episode and didn't want to talk shit about it? So he wrote that he wrote his name is non-disparagement because he didn't want.
Oh my God.
I know. It's crazy. I want to know more. I want to hear more.
Oh man.
Which is so interesting. As far as the reception to this episode goes though, it seems to be very split. Like I feel like I'm seeing, well, you've got the people who are saying it's too topical, who I think are wrong. Like, I don't mind you not liking this episode, but I think like, I don't think you understand the issue with topical stories if you think this is too topical. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like
whatever that COVID thing they're about to do, that might be where they can get that
exactly.
out. But like,
and I don't
that,
even
that,
think
that,
I,
that
I,
looks yeah. like overt a little bit like, but this is.
I don't even anticipate Zap gets canceled as being too topical because people getting in trouble for doing bad things is not topical. It's just the term canceled that's going to be the topical aspect, you know.
I saw something, I don't know where, I forgot where it was. I think it might have been that like featurette casting they did, but there was footage that I think I think that's from that one. And they have like a scarlet letter C on their chest for cancel. Yeah. I already think that's funny. I already think a scarlet letter C is funny. So like, I'm not that worried about that one.
And also Zap is so funny. Like it's going to be a Zap heavy episode and it's going to be Zap doing things he shouldn't do. It's going to be funny. It's going to be funny. I think it's going to be a good one. Mm-hmm. COVID episode. I'm worried about. We will see. I'm a little bummed that like out of the six I've seen, those are two that I haven't. And I'm like, oh, so I know, you know, like those are two that are just so, I was like, I just wish I had had those ones in my brain already so that I could know whether or not.
Right.
Yeah. Man, let's see what else we got.
But yeah, you were saying though, like there's two different kinds of people that don't like this one. And it's
yes.
I think it's topical.
Yes. There's that. And then there's just people who just didn't like the episode, which I think is fine. I do think like there's aspects of it that don't come together. Some of the storylines are flimsy, but there's a lot of people saying it's their favorite of the season. And I think that's partially because this episode doesn't rely on the first one relies on not only the end of Meanwhile to kick off the storyline, but the whole premise that the show has been rebooted. And then the second one relies on a previous episode storyline as a follow-up and, you know, kind of clumsily does some exposition there. So I think people like that this is so on its own. It's just a Futurama story. There's nothing that it feels like they're trying to build on to like win over the audience. It's just kind of its own Futurama story. So I don't know. It's interesting. This whole, the season definitely has people who are like, oh, I've given up hope already. This is terrible. They should never have brought it back. But that's exactly what happened last time. Like, it's just history fucking repeats itself. And when I look at the first three here versus the first three in the Comedy Central era, I still think these three are pretty much all better than the first three in the Comedy Central era. So, you know. We'll see. We'll see how it shakes out. But I don't know how anyone could look at these first three and just be like, oh, this is a disaster. They never should have done it. When that's exactly what you should have been saying last time then.
Right.
I don't know. It's also interesting how people perceive the Comedy Central era. I think people who started the show after that era started don't feel much about the difference between the eras, you know, which is weird for me. I don't know how to recontextualize the show for it not to exist in these clear eras for me. Be finally in tune with the audience's reaction to what was happening when it all came back. So it's just interesting how mixed I mean, it's like, I think I'm seeing more positive than negative, but the negative is like people who really dislike it, you know?
I haven't. Well, you would get more.
I mostly go look at the Reddit, videos. But Reddit is also just a more inherently negative place.
That's true.
Like, yeah. People just really hate shit. And
I haven't seen that many people. I've seen maybe two or three people in the wild say like, right. "Oh, this shit sucks." Everybody else just kind of seems to like it.
Right.
Then it's from what I've seen, but again, I haven't seen anybody talk about this one. I saw people talk about the other two, but like not this one.
Yeah.
Since it aired.
Yeah. I mean, the other ones have, the first one's the premiere back. So it has inherent, you know, an inherent trendability because Futurama's back. The second one was a follow-up to an old story that people wanted to see. So it makes sense that those were more talked about. This is just kind of your weekly Futurama romp, you know, like, like, I feel like this, you think about, I'm trying to think of the first seven episodes or so of the Comedy Central era. And it's like, there was a lot of topical stuff. There was Attack of the Killer App, which is very topical. There was Proposition Infinity, which is very topical. And then they did like the Da Vinci episode. Remember that one?
Oh yeah.
This feels like, you know, akin to that, where it's just like people watch it and it's a Futurama adventure and there's not much to talk about. You know, it's just a Futurama adventure.
I get you.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's some good bits in here. I remember when I was analyzing the trailers for this season and I saw that it was Doge City, I kind of rolled my eyes. I was like, oh God, this stupid crypto stuff. But that's a really clean parody of the name Dodge City, which is an old Wild West town that was very like lawless. And so now I'm like, oh wait, that's actually a good joke. It's a pretty great joke. The other things I love is I love the design for the piano robot. Love that robot. Think he's great. I just think that's a great classic Futurama design where it's like things aren't too digital. They're kind of analog. You know, I love a good analog Futurama robot. I think there were some good jokes early on. Like, I like when there's all these scientific explanations for why they can't fly the ship in and why they have to like ride it in like it's a covered wagon. And I like Leela saying, good thing we brought the oxen. Usually we don't.
I wrote that down because usually we don't. I like that a lot.
It's pretty good. I wish, I know, but this is like you said, it's like not, there's not a ton to talk about with this one. That's probably the reason we're not seeing all that much.
There's the shootout at the end, the multi-dimensional.
Shootout is sick. I like that a lot.
Does that really
where they rotate
cool
the Z-axis.
Yeah. That shit is great.
And pretty good looking 3D. Like a lot of the times when they do a 3D shot, it's like pretty noticeable. Yeah. You know?
That shot looks good. There's a shot
of Dwight.
Yeah. That's the one that's like, it's like, oh, okay, this is how this usually looks.
I do think it's pretty, still pretty impressive, but it is like, they're just so much less expressive when they're in that form. You know what I mean?
It looks like the game a little bit. Like that game. It
totally.
Looks like the game.
A little better, but yes.
Yeah. With TV budget polish on it, for sure. But
Disenchantment is another show that uses 3D models a lot, and I think they blend them better.
I would agree from what I've seen. I think, because you know what? Well, actually, Futurama does it too, huh? But I think the texture in the backgrounds in Disenchantment, when they do those 3D, like, boom, like, right around the castle shit, like, yep. I think it lends itself to look even better. And Planet Express in itself, when they do those 3D shots, they come down and they do, it looks good. It does look good. But I think the difference is that Planet Express is such, like, a shapely design that is kind of designed to look good.
To be good in 3D. Totally. Yeah. Same with the ship. When they do 3D shots of the ship. It's the characters that are meant to be in 2D. So when the characters are in 3D, they look a little funky. They do some pretty, I mean, you can still tell in Disenchantment, but I think for whatever reason, I don't know why I think their 3D character models look blend better.
I haven't seen the character models. I've only seen the backgrounds. And I think the backgrounds look sick.
I think they also make an effort to not have them up and in your face too much so that you can really see the difference. You know what I mean? They like they hide the faces effectively. So cause that's the real giveaway.
It's like live action when you're doing a basketball movie, but the actor can't play ball. So you got to have somebody come in and play ball for him. You can't hide. You got to hide his face and shit.
It's exactly like that. That's probably what they said. That's probably what they referenced when they said, this is how we got to do this.
That's it. We make a, in my house, we make a big deal about when stuff is in camera. Like in camera basketball, or because it's like it's definitely cooler when you're like, oh he so did that cooler. Shit. Yeah. You know what I mean?
That's right. That's exactly right. Man, let's see what else we got here. Oh, you know what I just caught on this rewatch? When they come into town, I only because I heard it and didn't catch it. They're coming into town, they're going through, and I heard a meep meep, like a roadrunner meet me. And I like backed up. I was like, what the heck was that? And there's a cage with a realistic looking roadrunner, not like the cartoon one. And he meet meeps. He meet meeps. I thought that was pretty good.
That's funny.
Yeah, that was pretty good. What did you think about? Okay, I want to talk about this. What did you think about? Because there's a lot of people who are really mad at this, and I think they're overreacting, even though I've been one to be critical of how they do this. They're mad at Leela being flirtatious with the Borax kid in this episode. And
is she really flirtatious?
I thought she was flirtatious to the degree that, like, her job in this episode is she is, like, working at the tavern/brothel. And, like, that's part of her job is to do that, is to, like, flirt with people and get tips. You know what I mean? But, like, and there is a joke that Fry makes, which I think rubbed people the wrong way. I thought it was really funny, which is where Leela thanks the kid for, like, saving him or saving her or whatever. And Fry says something like, it's nice to see you two getting along so intimately. Just because, like, Fry is just oblivious, which I think is a funny joke. Yeah. But I don't know. Like, literally the whole episode is, like, he saves her. She gets a little flirtatious. She's, like, thankful and, like, holds his hand and they walk through town. And then, like, anytime he... anytime he comes on to her, she's just like, nope.
Nope. Right. Then, and I think that's the important shit.
Right. And then you get that nice moment at the end where, what do they say? I didn't write it down, but,
he tries to disinfect her hand after she gets shot by Fry.
Yes. And then, but then she goes, and then Fry asks if he wants to, and she's like, I'd like that. Can I escort you to the brothel or whatever? So like, you know, I don't know. I think that moment hits really good. But yeah, that's interesting. And that's the other part of the story. So Leela basically, kind of becoming a sex worker in the, like supposed to be, but then her whole thing this episode is like, like not wanting to go to the brothel, which I think is fine. Cause that's in character. Like she's with Fry, they're exclusive. But I do think this is a good time. I actually have a guest I want to bring on, who had some stuff to say about the sex worker representation. It's my friend Electra Rain. She's an adult performer, a huge Futurama fan. She's really cool. And she hit me up and was like, hey, I really want to talk about this. Do you have any platform where I can talk about that? And I was like, why don't you just jump on the podcast with us for a little bit and we can go over it. So we're going to just throw to that real quick and we'll talk to Electra for a little bit and then we'll be back. Well, welcome Electra Rain.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Should I start interviews by saying what the f*** is up like I do at the beginning of the podcast?
Or we'll just start here.
What the f*** is up, Electra? How are you doing?
Oh, I'm good. How are you?
Doing great. Everyone, this is Electra Rain. She is a huge Futurama fan, adult performer, and she had a lot to say about this episode in particular. That's why you wanted to talk about this one, right?
Yeah, yeah. Actually, so fun fact, I am, the technical term is legal courtesan, which means legal prostitute, at a legal brothel here in Nevada. I work at Sherry's Ranch in Pahrump, Nevada. And so I was really excited to see, oh, a brothel in this episode. And then I had some really mixed feelings about how they handled there being a brothel in this episode.
Totally. Yes. There were definitely some lines in there that were like a little derogatory.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Oh, and I guess I should say too, for those who don't know who I am, I am sometimes known as the Futurama porn star. I have, I should have picked a better outfit for this.
Oh.
Uh-oh.
I am so sorry. I have the Planet Express logo tattooed on my... I'm like, is my hair going to get away? There it is. Tattooed on my right shoulder
Classic.
Blade.
Classic.
And so you do often, it's happened to me like once on the front page of Reddit that I saw where it was like people do the like cropped porn screenshot and they're like, oh, like I was watching a random movie and I found this. If you want some good Futurama laughs, go find that thread because there's like 600 comments and only two of them were mean and there's some great Futurama jokes in there.
That's so rare. So rare for Reddit. Reddit is
yeah,
so
right, yeah. That's a good ratio.
Yeah, no, the ratio is good. And then it's happened a few other times, I guess, where like the same type of thing happens in Facebook groups. I'm not on Facebook, but I do sometimes have fans send me screenshots and it'll be like Futurama Fry posting and it's like the same kinds of things. So I do get, I actually have had like a lot of OnlyFans conversations about Futurama and with Futurama nice. Fans, a lot of champagne rooms. So it comes up a lot.
I love that. Oh man, Futurama fans everywhere.
Yes.
that's great. So yeah, you reached out to me after this episode specifically because you were not stoked on how they did the brothel portrayal. How are you feeling? You said you rewatched it. How are you feeling?
Yeah, I watched it for a second time today and I actually, number one, liked the episode more on second watch, just like overall as an episode.
Cool.
So if you have mixed feelings about the episode, maybe watch it a second time. but also I realized that my negative feelings about the brothel situation in the show can mostly be traced to one specific line. And I think that line then kind of colors the rest of it. Cause like at first mention of the brothel, I was actually really excited. I was like, oh, cool. Like I've been getting into brothel history lately. And I know like, you know, there's a lot of academics in the writer's room and like, how are they going to handle this? Yes. Are we going to get fun brothel jokes? And we did in the sense that I loved, I have a degree in linguistics and there were a couple of really good, like linguistic wordplay jokes in here, especially Fry's sequence of not comprehending what a brothel is.
Yes.
I thought it was absolutely hilarious. Also, I have heard the, why do they call it a brothel? There's not even any broth joke twice at the brothel. And my response to that is always, well, we do have soup of the day, which is true. There's a restaurant like inside the brothel. Fun fact also, not a lot of brothels have like a bar or restaurant anymore. So that type of vibe that you see in the show of like, oh, we're in the bar, but you could ask the barmaid to go in the back room with you.
Right.
Like doesn't really exist. We're one of the only brothels, maybe the only brothel in North America that still actually have like a functional bar and restaurant. So you could come just eat or drink.
People just go there and eat.
Yeah. Or like, I do a lot of tours, like a lot of tours. And actually this is kind of funny. I have a horse. I live in Las Vegas. The brothel is about an hour and a half away. You can't, a common misconception is that there is legalized prostitution in Las Vegas. And that's not true. You can't in the entire county that Las Vegas is in. So yeah, it's legal in the next county over, like an hour and a half away. And give me one second. There was a reason I was telling this specific story and I have got distracted from it.
Oh, shoot.
Okay. No, I got it. So I live in Las Vegas. I have a horse. Hay for a horse is like $10 cheaper per bale over in the county where the brothels are versus here in Vegas.
Okay.
So when I go to work and you stay there for like 1 to 3 weeks at a time, you live there, which is actually super fun. You just like, there's champagne and titties everywhere. It's great. There's a pool and a hot tub. It's bizarre. Cause in some ways, like it feels like I'm on vacation, 24-hour topless hot tub. Like so great.
But you're working.
And in other ways it is like the most amount of work you ever do. Cause like you're kind of on call 24/7. Like my last tour, I got woken up in the middle of the night 5 different times. Two of those nights it happened twice. But then two of those five times. Yes.
You're always right.
We are like really hot, sexy firefighters, basically. Yeah, super cool. So when I go out to work, I bring my van and I buy hay out there and I fill my van up with hay. And that's also where I like take my friends to go smoke weed in my van. So it's like me and a bunch of hot friends with like a little star lamp in my van in the middle of the desert. Super cool. But I buy my hay with my tour tips is why I was telling the story. Nice. So we end up giving a lot of tours. People will come. Often you'll get like family groups, like adult family groups. People that just want to come and like eat lunch or eat dinner and grab a drink and get a tour of the property, which is fun. I'm chatty. I'm talky. So they'll like assign the tours to me and I like make them laugh, especially when people are like a little uncomfortable. But it's, super cool. I don't remember how I was tying all in and immediately.
Well, you're talking about how because this is sort of a historical look at a brothel since it's like an old West style and how that's how they were. They have she's the barmaid and she's working the brothel.
So that is not how it actually works. Like we do have bartenders and servers, but they are very specifically bartenders and servers. You cannot say and hostesses too. You can't say like, oh, I like the hostess. Will she go in the back with me? Like even if she was up for it, that is not how it works. She is an employee of the business. We are independent contractors. It is very separate. So my biggest issue, if we really want to get into it with the episode, is there's a line fairly early on. The madam asks Leela if she'd like a job as a barmaid or as a prostitute. And Amy interjects that Leela does not have the skills to be a barmaid, thereby implying that, well, yeah, but she does have the skills to be a prostitute. There are a few issues with this. The number one most obvious one is that prostitutes need to have all the skills of a barmaid and more. Like you do. You still need to be able to charm the clients and get the clients to like you. And then also like realistically, like if someone books an hour, they're not going to be fucking for that entire hour. Like what? So you need to have good like entertainment skills and get along well with people. And often you are like carrying a lot of things and because you have your like bungalow party basket and then you do get food in your room and all of these things. So that is just like simply doesn't make sense and was pretty disappointing, I think. I think that, you know, like right when Futurama first came out, like 20 plus years ago, that was like a super common attitude, like, oh, horrors don't know what they're doing and are stupid and they do it because they have no other skills. And there's this kind of like pervasive attitude about sex work that I started stripping in college and I've been like when I was 19 and I've been like, so I've been very intimately familiar with this attitude that like, oh, it's easy money. You don't need any skills. It's easy money. That's not true. What people I think are trying to get at with that idea is that it is accessible money in the sense that like you don't need a degree to do it. You don't need to have gone to a specialized training program. I was able to work like just a few nights a week while in college and pay for school and pay my rent and everything in a very flexible way that I wouldn't have been able to manage. If this was like right back when Futurama had first started, if we were 20 plus years back, I think that these types of ideas were really pervasive and like I'd kind of get it. It would feel dated in a way that's really understandable. And instead, it felt dated in a way that like, I don't know, so many shows even know like, oh, we don't call them prostitutes anymore, we call them sex workers. And to be fair, the use of the word prostitute in this episode was not inherently offensive to me. It largely made sense, although I will say they wouldn't have said prostitute in an old Westy time
what would
either.
They probably
would have said courtesan, which is, like I said, our like official legal designation. Like every 3 months I have to go to the sheriff's department for Nye County and I get like literally a physical card. They take your fingerprints and your ID and all these things. And your card literally says like legal courtesan license up at the top. Wow, and there's a picture in it. Yeah, I'm like an official, I am a legal and licensed prostitute. And you know, it's really funny how the different sheriff's departments do it too. I don't know how the other Nevada counties do it exactly. I know there are cards, but I've only worked in Nye County. But for Vegas, when you, even to be a stripper, you need a sheriff's card. And for Las Vegas itself, it says non-gaming entertainment license, because if you were in a casino, it would be a gaming license. Right. But for North Las Vegas, it says sexually oriented business employee card, which is not accurate because we're not employees, but is just like a fun. Right. All that is to say, the use of the term prostitute did not bother me in the episode, but right. I do feel like perceptions have changed, and I guess maybe that's on me for hoping that they would have changed too. But then also, this same line was upsetting to me as a Futurama fan, not even as a sex worker, because we've seen repeatedly, most notably, I think, in Indigata Delila, that Amy is a huge slut and right. proud of it. And like, I love, that's part of why I went to school for physics and linguistics. I have degrees in physics and linguistics. So I've always like, Amy has always really resonated with me in this like, oh, she's a physicist, but she's also a slut. Like, I love her. I love it. She has a signature color. I have a signature color back here. Like, so that was really disappointing. And even by the end of this episode, when they walk in the back room, but before they see the robot heads, Amy says, this is the worst brothel I've ever seen.
Right.
Implying that regardless of if she was working or she was going as a customer or maybe going for a tour, I don't know. She's been in brothels before, which absolutely fits her character. And so to make this comment about how like, oh, there's no skills, it's so shitty, ha ha ha. Like, that's disappointing. It's not true to the character.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, like Futurama, obviously a lot of the writers are a bit older because they still have a lot of their original writers, and you know they're getting pretty old these days, those guys.
Yeah.
And also Futurama, as good as it is, it's always been a pretty male dominated writers room. They've had some women in there, but it's like it's been a lot of men. I think this is the most women they've ever had in the writers room is for this new season. But yeah, it's interesting to see how those things might change. Obviously here they missed the mark again, but and this was episode written by Ken Keeler, so that tracks. He wrote it under a pseudonym. We talked about that a little bit in this episode earlier. I don't know if it's that he
that.
So yeah, we'll tell you this. We mentioned it earlier in the episode. He wrote it, his name listed is Nona D. Spargment, which basically is just non-disparagement. So I don't know if he hates this episode and that he wrote it and he's like, I don't want to like say anything bad about the episode I wrote. But yeah.
That's bizarre. How do you know it was him?
Because he's listed on IMDb as wrote this episode as this name.
Weird.
And I think previously when they were, there's like all these electronic registry websites that list titles of episodes that are registered with like the WGA. And this one was listed as him previously. And now it's this other, this non person.
It's non-existent.
I know he's never done that. He's never done that before.
That's bizarre.
It is bizarre. So I don't know if he's just not happy with how this turned out or if like parts of it changed in the writer's room in ways he didn't want it to. And he just didn't want to put his name on it but it's, but you know, overall this was written by Ken Keeler, who's a great writer, but he's another one of their old guys, you know, for in the writer's room. How did you feel about the episode overall? You said you liked it better the second time.
I did. I thought it was really fun. The first watch through, you noted this in your YouTube video. And I had the exact, as I'm watching your YouTube video, I'm like, is he going to say it? Is he going to say it? You actually got out pretty much all of my thoughts on the episode as a whole. The fact that they used the real names of the cryptocurrencies was like huge. Like it kept pulling me out of the episode. Like, actually, my one disagreement with you in there, and I said this to my wife as we were watching your video last night, you said something about like, oh, but it's a small problem, this episode, blah, 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 and we paused it, and I was like, I do not think it was a small problem, because it is a small thing. It is a simple change of verbiage. Literally, all they had to do was make up a fake name. They didn't even need to add extra backstory or anything, but it did just keep like pulling me out of it consistently every time they said Bitcoin or Ethereum. And on the second watch, I think because I was ready for that, it wasn't nearly as distracting.
Totally.
And that allowed me to appreciate the episode more. But I did think that this was a really fun story. Really, I think, like, there's a few other minor tweaks I'd make, but I think if you cut the song about Bender and his ass, I love that plotline, did not like the song, or make it, like, the first two lines and then cut to something else. Like, imply right. that he's singing mm-hmm. this song. We don't need the fully produced number. You can only say ass so many times and have us still giggle in that song.
Right.
If you cut that number, if you cut Amy's line, the really anti-sex work one we just discussed, and you give the cryptocurrencies new future names, I think it's a pretty good episode. Yeah. Not one of their best ever, not some amazing masterpiece, but it is fun. I like the Old West thing. I like that they took this very contemporary cryptocurrency idea, but then they, with the thallium, they went like a little bit to the side of it. I loved the six-way duel at the end. I loved the brothel wordplay joke. I loved the taint even worth melting down wordplay when yeah. they're when his ass is oh, assed. Yeah.
I didn't even catch that one. I didn't catch that one. That's hard.
You know, I watch with captions on. And I think sometimes I watch everything with captions on. Yeah. I have some auditory processing issues. And I think that that was one of those ones where had I not seen it written out, I probably wouldn't have caught it either.
Sure.
But to literally see taint on the screen, and they did use an apostrophe, but I still caught it. Taint even worth melting down.
I like that. That's, like...
That's a great joke. Wow. Yeah. I did not even, I didn't process that one either.
Amazing. It was a subtle one. It was good. It was good. I did like this episode. It's honestly, it's probably my favorite out of the season so
far.
Oh,
really? Interesting.
Whoa. Yeah. Well, because Johnny, you and I talked a little bit about this.
Yeah.
The first episode felt to me, I didn't like the literal plot of the episode, but I thought the writing was really good.
Yeah.
It felt to me like a Comedy Central era plot with Fox quality writing.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm going to give it to them. It's the first episode. They want to really address the change to streaming.
Right.
That's fair. It left me very excited for what the rest of it holds. And then the second episode felt like a flip. It felt like a Fox quality plot, this like really great instrumental plot. And I did not like the writing. And the fact that they repeatedly, you also had noted this, the fact that they like repeatedly were acting like nobody remembers what happens at all.
Yeah.
That also just took me out of it, made no sense. Then they had to make the characterization weird. It felt like it really messed up what could have been this really telling plot. And actually, I was saying this to a friend of mine, and he had such a great idea for how they could have fixed that. He suggested that instead of like retelling all of this stuff, if an episode connects to a previous episode, they could just have a little cold open clip that's Morbo yelling at you about what episode you need to go, pathetic humans, go and review whatever episode, which like they is... feels a lot more on brand than what they actually
funny.
Did. Like, we even see the iPhone clip and the other characters are there in the iPhone clip. Didn't make any sense.
It's ridiculous.
So that one was a mess for me and was kind of heartbreaking because I was also looking forward to the follow-up on the storyline.
Yeah.
And it just felt really mishandled. So then this one, like, obviously I have my qualms with it, but overall just felt like a fun, silly story that I appreciated. And so, like, overall, if you average everything out, I think that makes... this one, the one I enjoyed the most so far.
That's pretty much how I felt about it. This is probably my least favorite of the season, but I feel the same way about the other two episodes as you do. I guess it just kind of comes down to what aspects of those episodes you're most drawn to and you most appreciate as a right. viewer of Futurama. Because I thought the first one was really funny, but it was also too on the nose. The second one is so lovely and heartfelt with a lot of clumsy expositional problems. And this one, I'm just like, this is just a solid Futurama. Like, this is a Futurama story. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Great. Wow. I'm so glad we had you on. This is so good. Do you have any other thoughts about the season as a whole or about this episode? Or we definitely need to bring you on when we change our format up. We haven't told our audience what our new format's going to be yet, so we're still just teasing. But but we'll have to have you back on when we change that over. No spoilers. And
no spoilers, but I'm happy to come back anytime you want.
Cool. Great. Is anything you want to plug? You want anywhere people can find you? How do you want
to? Yeah, sure.
Sign
I'd love
off.
To. Okay, yeah, sure. So, again, hi, I'm Electra Rain. Rain is spelled R-A-Y-N-E. I'm sorry, I know it's weird. It's Electra with a C. My website is either electrarain.net or, because it's easy to remember and easy to spell, chicagoslut.com. They'll both take you to the same place. I'm from Chicago. I still have the Chicago flag and skyline on me, so I'm like known for that. I'm known as the Chicago porn star and the Futurama porn star, which are like not bad things. I'll absolutely take it.
Two things I love.
Yeah, I'm right. Yeah. Me too. But yeah, I am an adult performer and director from Chicago, based in Las Vegas. You can meet me at Sherry's Ranch if you want. That info is on my website and their website. And then I am also the creator and the director for, for QueerCrush.com, which is the only lesbian porn site that's made entirely by actual queer women and sapphic non-binary folks. So it's just like me and my business partner inviting sexy ladies over to come do whatever they want in this room, my guest room. It's a really fun time. So we're in our first year. We're coming up on our first anniversary. And if that's your kind of thing, we'd love it if you check us out.
Cool. Awesome. Thanks again for having, or thanks for coming on and talking about the show. Yeah. And we'll see you next time.
Thank you for having me. Yeah. See you next time.
All right. And we're back. Thanks to Electra. We'll probably have you back on the pod in the future, in our much teased new format. Ooh. No, we've got no more information for you yet. but thanks for coming on. That was great. Let's wrap up this episode. How do you feel about this episode as a whole?
I think it's fine. It's just like one of those like on the boring side Futurama episodes to me.
I feel
like it's I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with it. Like story-wise or anything like that, you know what I mean? I think there's ways it could have been stronger, but I don't think there's nothing about it that I feel like, I don't know, it's like a misrepresentation of the characters or anything like that. Stuff that would normally make me go like, oh yeah, I can't watch this one. I'm just kind of not interested in the direction that a lot of the stuff goes.
I agree. You know what I did like at the end is like, I liked how, even though it felt like a little quick how they got there, I liked the idea that she was kidnapping robots and using their heads for Bitcoin mining. Like, that's a cool way to combine your slightly topical subject with real Futurama stuff. And I also just love the joke. I love the joke from Hermes where he just goes, that's actually a pretty reasonable use case for robot heads. that was pretty funny. I like the six-way duel. I think that's great. I think it's very funny how they all coincide. They all happen at once. And like doing it on all the different axes is really sick. I like the final moment with Dwight where he just goes, I love you, Pops. And Limbo isn't entirely stupid. That's like a good little middle ground for Dwight. He's like, I'm not going to tell you it's cool. And I like
and then
him
Hermes
saying,
says, doesn't Hermes say, and neither are you.
And neither are you, which is funny. That's really good. And I do like Dwight saving. I like Dwight saving Hermes with Limbo. I think that's funny. I think that was great. But I understand why, like, this is kind of a slower episode. It doesn't feel like all the stories coincide in the most satisfying way. Like, I feel like the end of Roswell that ends well, everything just comes together, you know? And same with 300 Big Boys. Like, the big fire sequence at the end of 300 Big Boys is like, I think that stuff all ties together great.
Man, that shit where Fry is like zipping around, it's like, it's so funny, and it's earned and everything.
It's
and
so 300 good.
Is so
I know.
Funny. I love
well,
it.
The shot that kills me every time is because he looks so disheveled and ridiculous from all the coffee drinking. And then as soon as he gets that 100th cup and he just like looks radiant like an
like
angel and just turns
so
and
funny.
Smiles. It's so funny.
I love it.
It's so, so good. Oh, man, what a good episode. I think there's some good stuff in here. I think there's nothing in this episode that like really bums me out. Oh my God, my dog's freaking out. So let me, hey,
I forgot she was on your lap.
yeah, that's right. She was good the whole episode. I don't know. Like it is like, this feels like a very middle of the road episode for me where, and you know, it's like, I feel like you look at these first three and I've got very different things I like about and very different. Ponyo, you gotta dig up my bed. What are you doing here? I've got very different things I like and dislike about all three episodes so far. Like, first episode I thought was very funny, but I do think it was too on the nose storyline wise with the reboot. The second one I thought was a great emotional story that fumbled some of its exposition a little bit. And this last one I think is like a solid middle of the road episode with some good ideas, that aspects of it don't all come together in the strongest way. You know, like none of these episodes have been perfect, but they've all been solid. And nothing, there's not like, I haven't watched any episode that's just made me be like, oh my God, why did they do this? You know what I mean? But I guess that also begs the question that I keep thinking about this now. And, you know, like I've seen the first six and I like all six. And there's one in particular in these six that I like the most for sure. And we haven't seen it yet. But that being said, with the Comedy Central run, it felt like that first stretch we had some really bad episodes, some real middle of the road episodes, and some really, really good episodes. And so, like, would you rather have Futurama return and just have a solid baseline of consistently good but not great episodes, and have 10 of those? Or would you rather have a handful of really bad ones and a handful and like a couple absolute top tier bangers?
I think I'll go
it's hard to say,
yeah,
right?
It is, like, it's hard because, like, you know, because I'm thinking about the totality of the show, right? And how, like, just because, okay, if the episodes are just like good and they're fine, I think that also opens people up to being like, well, they could have just not did this because they didn't do anything extravagant. But it makes it harder where, like, if you say, like, oh, they shouldn't have fucking did the Comedy Central ones. But it's like, no, but you lose the late Philip J. Fry.
You lose Lethal Inspection. What I mean? Like, you lose Near Death Wish. You lose Game of Tones. You lose over Clockwise. Stenchability. Like, that's where I'm at. Like, I'm going to need an episode that blows me away. Like, I feel like Lesser Bog was so close. Like, Lesser Bog, if it had just handled its exposition stronger and didn't do that stuff with Leela that bothered me, like I think I could have come into the second episode and been like, all right, this was worth it. You know what I mean? This is all worth it. And so far, I mean, I do think this sixth episode, I'm so excited for you to see the end of that episode. There's just a thing they do at the end that I like. It's great. It's great. I don't know what else to say about it, but it's going to be, I'm excited to talk to you about it. But like, I don't know if it's a thing that makes me be like, this was all worth it. You know what I mean? Like, it's like a nice thing they do. And then, I don't know. I have four more to watch this season. There's 10 more coming next year. I'm really hoping that we just get one of these absolute top tier bangers, like Lethal Inspection, late Philip J. Fry, that kind of stuff that is so good that everyone is like, all right, thank God we got this. It's all worth it. You know, like that's exactly what late Philip J. Fry felt like. Even though Lethal Inspection, I think, is that way, there were some people who weren't as high on that one. Some people were like, well, the ending was good, but the rest of the episode was fine. It was just fine. And I kind of felt I really liked Lethal Inspection, and it's grown on me more and more as time's gone on. But it wasn't until late Philip J. Fry where I was like, okay, this is like, thank God it's back. This is incredible. And that won an Emmy. Mm-hmm. That won them a damn Emmy. Right. So we will have to wait and see.
Yeah, man.
It's gonna be interesting.
You know what this episode made me start to think about?
What?
I've been thinking about it a lot recently. I don't really know why, but it kind of, this episode, for some reason, made me think about it even more. I think Futurama looks the best in 4x3, and I don't really have an answer why. I think that's like the best version, like best looking version of it.
That's something we should also talk about, because there have been a lot of people who are saying they think this new chunk of episodes looks kind of cheap.
I agree. I
don't think it looks... I mean, I don't know. Like, when I started, I was like, oh, this just looks like it used to look. But it does feel like they're doing less dynamic stuff.
There's less character acting is what I'm realizing.
Yes, and like totally.
There's less variations in the in like expressions and stuff like that.
Yeah, I'm wondering if their budget's just smaller on Hulu.
I think it has to be.
And there's
no way they're paying the amount that like
yeah.
Comedy Central or
But Comedy
Fox
Central
or...
was already a lower budget. And like I guess that's the other question is like I think Comedy Central era took some of the budget out of the writer's room. Maybe this mm-hmm. era is like, well, let's get the writer's room to be substantial and we'll take it out of the animation pipeline. Yeah. But I'm also looking at like I'm looking at the timeline from when they must have started animating because they did their first table read about a year and a half ago. So these episodes were probably done. It feels like the animation cycle for these episodes was quicker than say something like this newest season of Disenchantment that's about to come out. If you look at the trailer for the new season of Disenchantment, looks incredible, like just stunning. It looks amazing. These are the same people, like these are the same people making these shows. So I'm just wondering, does Netflix have more money invested in Disenchantment? Did they have more time to put the effort into work on that in the animation pipeline? Is Futurama suffering a bit from a little bit of a lower budget? Hopefully they're maybe saving. Hopefully maybe they're putting a little bit more time into certain episodes to make them really look great.
Yeah, that could be it too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You don't know. But I noticed it like, I want to say like within the first 2 minutes of the first one.
Right.
But I was like, I don't want to be that guy to be like, they aren't fucking moving. Like, you know what I mean? Family Guy fan. Who cares if they're not moving? So like, I was like,
It had good character work before, good character animations. Mm-hmm.
That's what leads me to believe that it's like, I think you're right. I think it could either be a budgetary thing or a timeline thing or both, to be honest with you. Less budget and less time means less time to like fix like corrections and stuff. There's like a lot, especially in the first episode, there's a lot of parts where like Bender looks wonky or like in this one, there's like a couple things they do with the professor's design where I'm like, that's like off model. Like they normally wouldn't.
Yeah. Leela has a little couple
of
shots that she looks a little wonky in this one too. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If they had more time or like more budget, they'd just be like, hey, go fix that. But if they can't do that and it's like, all right, whatever, that'll do. Let's just keep going to her and finish it.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. It'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see for sure. I'm really excited just to see. Well, I mean, we'll talk. I mean, I have to go back and rewatch these other three that I have access to and like take a look at the animation in particular, because I feel like it wasn't until I've been rewatching that I've really been noticing that I'm like, oh yeah, this doesn't look as dynamic. There's a lot less going on here. Yeah, we'll see. I'm excited to keep talking though. Next week is Parasites Regained, the pseudo follow up to Parasites Lost. One of my favorite episodes of the whole show. I fucking love Parasites Lost. And I'm excited to talk about it. I got a lot of thoughts about it. There's a lot going on with it. And I think it does some cool stuff. I don't think it's what people would expect a follow-up to that episode to be. And I think that's good and bad. You know what I mean?
Okay.
It's like, we'll see. I think people who are hoping they'll bank on the nostalgia of that episode will be disappointed, because I think they just kind of do something new. They kind of do something new with similar ideas is how I'll describe it. But I'm excited. I'm excited to talk about it. I'm excited to talk about all these. You got anything you want to plug or talk about before we go?
Monday Monopoly again.
Monday Monopoly.
Doesn't stop, doesn't quit. help fund
yeah, the
help
only
fund
problem
the
with... The only problem with Monday Monopolies is it's monopolizing your goddamn Mondays. We can't record.
That's true. It is. It definitely
is. Nah, it's cool. It's fine.
They need to invent another another day that starts with M, and then I'll move it.
All right. Yeah, I don't know. I just put out a video about Ike. I think it's pretty good. Go watch it.
Like, by just put out, he means like 10 minutes before we started recording.
It's true. It was I literally texted, hey, can we start in 10 minutes because I have to post this video. Cool. We want to hear what you guys have to say about this season. Let us know in the comments. What do you think about this episode? Where does it rank in your three so far? How do you feel about the show looks? How do you feel about it being written? How it's being written? Give us all your thoughts. We'll argue in the comments. Just kidding. thank you to Electra Rain for coming on here to talk about your episode, this episode, and the concerns with the episode you had. And thank you. We should wrap it up, huh?
Yeah,
and with
it.
That, I want to thank Carrie Feek for our artwork. I want to thank Jake Neutron for our theme song. I want to thank Michael Yunus for executive producing, editing the podcast, and co-hosting After Dark. We will be back at After Dark soon, we promise. We've just been, this last few weeks have been a whirlwind for me life-wise, and I've been getting my videos out on the show and our podcast out. It's just been a lot, but stay tuned. We'll have KFP 2 and 3 coming up. I also want to thank, speaking of, the Cursed Ones for allowing us to do those Patreon episodes. Yes. We couldn't do it without you. Thanks to the rest of the audience as well. You're great, but you are one tier below the Cursed Ones, so just remember that.
One tier below!
But you could be a Cursed One too. I'm just saying. Just saying. Check out our Patreon. And I want to thank you, Toonrific Tariq, for...
Oh, me.
Yeah. Yeah. For being our... Being my... My other host. We're going to both be hosts now. We're not going to be co-hosts. and, you know, thanks all of you. I love you so much and everything, but also very much. So long.